This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs to create extraordinary success.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Own It Show Coach Conversations, because that's where the best conversations are had. We know that I'm not currently, if you're watching on YouTube, that I'm not in a coach. I'm actually in a chair today. And that's because I don't have my co-host, although I'll pretend that she's here. And I'll get her energy and I'll bring it in subconsciously. But however, our guest is going to bring more than enough energy for us today. And anytime that we've discussed about reinventing yourself, we've talked a lot about how things happen to us, but in actuality, they don't really happen to us, they happen for us. And it's for us to realize what our true purpose is. And when we can lean into our purpose, we all of a sudden find this newfound energy, found this newfound love for life that allows us to take ownership over that and ultimately impact people in a much larger way. And our guest today has really had a very unique journey from playing soccer at an extremely high level, being extremely talented, growing up in a family that was extremely successful, and spending time in the fitness space. It's really where he saw himself first, ultimately then leading over into KPMG, obviously a very, very successful financial firm, and then ultimately coming over into Athletic Greens and being there for the past 6 years as their chief revenue officer, and really creating a great movement, not just being a part of a company in a great way, but allowing himself to lead and ultimately create this movement in our world for better health and better vitality for people and humanity. And so without further ado, I'd love to introduce John Korn, because this guy, he's just so dialed in and he understands and he gets it. He's got that it factor when it comes to a mindset space. And I'm really excited for you guys to get inside his mind, inside his journey, and be able to relate to this man that is extremely relatable at the same time. So John, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you for having me.
John, I know we've been chatting, kind of give people a little bit of just an insight into John Korn, because if this was a Dos Equis commercial, we'd say John Korn, the most interesting man in the world. It's the Own It Show, and he's still the most interesting man in the world. And so kind of give us a little background into your childhood and how you grew up. Because when we spoke, there was something that really just, it hit me like a bag of bricks in the face, and was very, very relatable in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. And I'll start off by saying that I'm still learning, you know, I'm still learning myself. I'm still learning about my childhood. New things come up for me every single time, every new moment that allows me to reflect, and I learn something new. So today, like when I share this, it's kind of where I am on my journey today of knowing myself and knowing my childhood. But, you know, I'm from Australia. I grew up in Sydney, and, you know, I came into a family that was, you know, we were fine. We were well off, and, you know, life was pretty simple up until about 8 years old, which is when the time my parents ripped me out of Australia and we moved to New York. And that was probably the change that I needed as a little kid back then. You know, at that time, when your parents rip you out of your life as an 8 year old, you're kind of mad at them. You're like, hey, I had all these friends. You know, I had this life. I was a good, you know, soccer player. I was really enjoying it. And you're eight years old. So you know nothing really. And then your parents rip you out and you're mad at them. I look back on it today and I thank them a lot for moving me out of Australia. You know, what that's done for me is it's built in this just natural, or I guess nurtured, adaptability, such that being put in situations or new ones, I feel comfortable. I feel good. I feel centered, and I can sort of move in the direction that I need to in that moment. And it takes time. It takes time to build that, and it's not perfect every time. But in that childhood with the move, you know, externally looking at the family, things, you know, they looked pretty peachy. You know, my dad had a good job. He was fairly successful. He kind of climbed the ranks at Louis Vuitton. We were fine. We were comfortable, you know, but internally, you know, you can look at it a little bit differently. We definitely had, you know, emotional struggles I think, with the family growing up. And I won't go too deep in it. You know, I don't have my parents, you know, and family's permission to do that. But what I will kind of go into is it really did affect me in a big way. I became sort of extroverted from Australia, going to quite introverted and internal when we moved to the US. I found that trying to get comfortable at home and get comfortable in a new and external environment was very actually hard for me. And so what I got natural at doing was kind of stepping outside of myself, you know, kind of being a bit of a chameleon and moving between groups and people. And, you know, that's something that I've sort of had to dial back throughout the years to make sure that I'm coming back to who I am. But that was just something that when I've reflected back on, that's effectively what I was doing. I could fit in with pretty much any group that was there. And I was doing what was needed to fit in there. One of the biggest impacts for me, you know, I remember, and my, you know, my parents have told me this story a number of times, but, you know, you sort of mentioned playing soccer at a high level. That was sort of a goal for me, you know, for a long time up until I was about 23. By that point, you start to realize people out there better than you. And so you kind of need to pivot and move to your next thing, using your attributes and your skills that you've kind of nurtured and created over time. But back then, that was my goal. And when we moved to the US, you know, I went to the soccer trials, and I remember being in those trials and thinking to myself, hey, I think I've got this. I think I can get myself into that A team, that travel soccer A team. But I got the call, and I was put in the B team. I was surprised as a kid with a bit of an ego developing. It kind of hit me, you know, I complained to my parents, and over the next couple of years, I remained in that B team. I didn't know why, you know, I felt like I deserved being that A team. But what it did for me is it created this, I went from kind of just having talent to having to like work my ass off. And there was a chip on the shoulder that was created back then. It was this underdog mentality that it put me in to work my ass off. And I appreciate that time. Again, at the time, it you kind of said something to me. I remember when we spoke where you said it wasn't meant to be that you were supposed to kind of reach that highest level. And I loved that comment because it was so true. And I think this part of my life, when this happened, it probably put that dent in that in a positive way when you look back on it. And, you know, after about 3 years, I remember I eventually got up into that A team. There was something that happened in the community that allowed me to kind of step up into it. It was outside of my control as a young guy at that time. And what that did is it just showed that my hard work was paying off, but it did create a little bit of a lack of trust of people in power. And so I had this dynamic with power, and you can start seeing like psychological things that come in with this. So that power goes to things like teachers at school. It goes into, you know, when I was at KPMG, it goes into my relationship with my parents. And I just didn't like people having control over my choices. It was freedom. Freedom was something that I've looked back on my, you know, I mentioned I was off for a couple of weeks recently, and freedom was one of those words that came up for me quite a bit. And so freedom, you know, shows up for me in many ways. And one of those ways is like freedom of choice. And over time, you know, you begin to get to choose how you feel, choose how you feel in a certain state, period or event. You get to choose how you reflect and respond to something. And that freedom definitely was not cultivated back then. I was still that kid that had a huge chip on his shoulder. I remember after turning 13, you know, we had a tough time, I think, internally at the family through those years in New York. It definitely created a dynamic with my family that has kind of shaped me into who I am today. And then we moved back to Australia, and the same thing happened. I had to fit in again. You know, I had to kind of step in, and I was the chameleon again, trying to be friends with everyone, with all the groups. I remember I joined the chess team because I thought that would be a great idea, and to get out of something that I didn't want to do, and got along with that. And I appreciated that about myself. You know, I appreciated being able to connect with many people, but there was still an element that was missing, which was I was kind of like outsourcing who I was to the people looking back at me, external validation, if you will. And when I moved back to Australia, the same thing happened. I moved back into the B team and I was like, what is this? I felt that I deserved to be in the A team. So I worked my ass off and, you know, a year later I was in the A team. And it was that sort of like perseverance and that consistency and just showing up every single day in that period as a young kid that just kind of got cultivated over time. I think when things started going a little bit south for me was when, you know, you create these ideas in your head of who you are and the outcomes that you want and the goals that you're going after. And when something happens and you start losing sight of that, you start building this gap between your expectations and where things are at. And that's where blame can come in. And that's the opposite of, you know, you call it, it's the own it show. It's the op. We had a quick conversation about ownership before we started. And that's where ownership comes in, is that bridge between that expectation and the outcome. And what happened to me when I was sort of 15, 16 was I had sort of 9 months worth of the chronic pain, right? And that 9 months kind of pulled me out of my dream of becoming a professional soccer player because I wasn't playing at all. I went to dozens of specialists to try and find what was going on, but I had to get to that answer. Like I had to find out what was going on. So I kept going, kept searching. And then I finally found someone that, you know, took the time to understand what was going on with my body and figured out that there was a deformity in my lower back that caused a vulnerability in my hip. But what that did is it took me out of my passion, the thing that I wanted so much in the world, it took me out of it. And so that was a little bit of identity lost, you know, in that time when I was 15 or 16. And I remember, you know, I would blame all the specialists for giving me the wrong diagnosis. I would blame them. They didn't know my body. They're just telling me the wrong stuff. But I guess what I was doing during that time subconsciously was I was so dialed in with how I felt that I knew there was something more to it. And so I kept taking ownership and going, okay, we need to find the next one. Blessing or a curse, trying to find that result. But we ended up doing it. At the same time, I was, you know, not the best to my parents because I blame them as well. You know, they were trying to be supportive. They were trying to like have the doctor's perspective. But again, like I'm a 15-year-old going through puberty and all that fun stuff. So I really didn't have the mindset to where I've evolved today. And, you know, I eventually went back into football, you know, playing soccer again, played in a high level, you know, really didn't even know what I wanted to do other than just that. And then when I was about 19, the chronic pain kicked again. And the chronic pain, it's definitely, you know, looking back, it's developed from a lot of emotional stress in my life. It doesn't really have a lot to do. There's a part of its biomechanics, but at the same time, a lot of it is emotional stress and how I handled it. And that was stuff related to family, stuff related to whatever was in my life. And it was just the way that I responded to it. And so that actually lasted for 4 years. And this was probably the biggest turning point for me, you know, coming into this idea of mindset and ownership and personal growth. I think growth and being competitive and wanting to be the best or being attracted to the best was something that I always had as a kid. I remember all my projects were about Pele or Michael Jordan or Michael Johnson. Like that was like, those are the people I was, you know, I admired as a kid. But in these 4 years of chronic pain, I was a personal trainer leading up to that at college, and I completely lost my body, completely lost my confidence. I didn't feel like I could train any of my clients. I basically took away my movement, and I was a shell of myself. I lost my complete identity. I knew that like the professional soccer thing wasn't going to happen. This is when I was working at KPMG. I moved into that realm mainly because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And my dad sort of said, hey, why don't you go and try that for a bit? And I was like, hey, that sounds like a okay idea. I'll try that. But during this time, I had an anxiety attack. And I remember it so clearly. I was sitting at my computer at a client at KPMG, and the computer just turned to the matrix. I didn't understand what was going on in it. And it was like having an earthquake inside my body. And I remember I called my mom. I walked out and I called my mom, and I'm a 23-year-old, a 22-year-old, calling my mom, being like, hey mom, I think something's wrong. I don't feel good. And she's like, come home. I said, I don't want to come home. I want to go, I'll go to my apartment and I want to sit there. I'll just do that. I drove home shaking all hell, probably shouldn't have driven, got back. And I remember it so clearly sitting and looking at a blank TV for 4 hours, didn't move, I was afraid if I moved, something would happen. So I was in a really bad state. And I remember this would have been about at the 3-year mark. I thought, am I ever going to get out of this body that I'm in right now? And I didn't quite understand what was going on at the time. I was so focused on trying to figure out the Western route of everything. And they took me to a pain clinic. They sort of diagnosed me with psychosomatic chronic pain syndrome, which is effectively like you're creating it in some way. And
you're creating the pain yourself, basically.
I'm creating the pain myself. Yeah. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be in a room where someone was talking about the mind-body connection at a very, very young age. And that's kind of when things started clicking for me. But I was creating the pain myself. And so what they did is they sent me into a sports psychologist office, gave me some antidepressants. And I remember walking into this sports psychologist office. I think I was 22 or 23. It was a Friday afternoon. And I walk in and I said to him, hey, my mates are at the bar right now having a good time. I'm here with you. And he, you know, how can you help me? And I remember he's like, well, you know, tell me why you think you're here. And I started talking and he goes, I know what I'm going to call you. I'm going to call you Captain Intensity. And it kind of just deflated me in a really positive way. And I was like, that's interesting. This guy's joking with me. I like this. There was an immediate connection that was built. And for the next year working with him, a couple things popped up. It was creating perspective about myself, you know, spending time reflecting on me, taking me back to my childhood. That was the first time child sort of integration was pushed onto me. And I think just the cultivation of that competitive mindset and wanting to get better, just in an athlete kind of world, just translated into me as myself. And because I went from being extroverted to introverted as a kid, and sort of having that balance or that polarity, I was able to go internal and look at myself a little bit. And what I learned through that process is I had an underlying level of belief in myself, but my confidence was wavering. And he kind of made this comment to me. He was like, you know, confidence is like the seasons. Comes and goes. There's winter, summer, spring, and autumn or fall, but your belief is strong. So you've got to try and come back and attach yourself to your belief. And that's kind of coming back to like accepting yourself, accepting, you know, who you are, and understanding that like things will change. The seasons will change, years will go on, things will evolve. And it was just creating awareness. And the other thing that sort of helped me in that is in that journey as well around that time was I was so sort of done, or I think I reached my limit of Western medicine, that I ended up putting myself into a 10-week meditation course at a random Buddhist center in Sydney. And I was the youngest by about 40 years. We sat there, you kind of had to explain why you were there. And I remember the man sitting next to me, he went before me. And the story that he described to me, like it hit me in the way that I looked at myself and I said, John, you are a 23-year-old that has got a bad back and you've lost your identity. This guy has been in pain for 40 years. Gain some perspective and get your act together.
What did that do for you? What did that do for you looking at somebody who, I see this as almost two questions here, John. One is, what did that do for you knowing that somebody else has been struggling with this forever? But also, what did that do for you knowing that somebody else has been struggling this forever and you're just 23?
Well, okay. So the first thing was time. I've got 40 years.
Yep. You know,
I've got 40 years. And I felt lucky. I felt lucky that I was early on my journey. I didn't know how long
he'd been. That's a blessing.
Yeah. I didn't know how long he'd sort of been on this journey himself into evolving out of the pain. You know, I was early on and I felt lucky that I was early on and I felt lucky that I was young. And the big thing for me was gaining perspective over time and distance and myself. And that was like, okay, this is going to be a long journey. So I need to be patient with it. And that's where I, when I kind of got that, I got a little bit more rational, you know, I got a little bit more rational about myself. And I said, okay, let's break things down. What is it that I want? I want my body back. I want movement back. Okay. What's the easiest way to move? What have humans been doing for such a long time? Walking, running. I was like, running feels like a pretty, it's a straight line. It's pretty natural for the body. I want to get back into that. And so that I found myself a really empathetic and bought in running physical therapist. And that's important when you're trying to work with someone. I'm, and, you know, you and I had a chat about this a couple of weeks back, but coming down and trying to find the right person for you to work with isn't how good they are at necessarily at their job. It's how bought into you and solving your problem. Because, you know, the way that I've kind of described my journey a little bit, it wasn't a straight line. It's definitely not a straight line. My dad has said this phrase to me before. I'm not sure where he got it from, but a pilot leaves JFK to Charles de Gaulle, and it's going from A to B. He knows where he's got to go, but during the flight, he's got to change direction all the time based on air, based on wind, like thunder,
whatever.
So you're going left and right, and that's kind of how the journey's been. And what I've gotten better at is quickly identifying when I need to address something. Over time, it's iteration, and the more reps you do that, the quicker you can start coming to your conclusions. But yeah, to kind of answer your question, it gave me time. I felt really lucky. It gave me perspective to ground myself, start being rational around it, start understanding what were some of the things that weren't working for me in my journey so far. And I got to the conclusion that I was going to do running. I was going to get back into that, and I was going to find someone who was bought in and empathetic with me. Obviously they have to have skill, but they have to have that compassion, which is you have empathy, but then you can do something about it, right? And so what he did is I met him, I worked with him, and he said, okay, what you're gonna do is you're gonna go to a soccer field, you're gonna run the short and walk the long, and you're gonna do 4 laps. And I was like, you're kidding me. Like, that's like crawling. He's like, yeah, you're gonna learn to crawl again. We're gonna build this in. And I just followed him. I said, okay, I'm going to take it out of my hands and I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to trust you. And that was, you know, I got back into running. And ever since, that was sort of about 24, 25. It's been a good sort of long period of no pain, no chronic pain. And just a long journey going through this. There was another bout sort of my late 20s, which came from a family dynamic, which that's kind of when it hit me even harder around, okay, the childhood is where we need to focus. And fortunately, I had good therapists during that time, good coaches during that time to help me navigate some of those things. And that's I've always looked, when I first went into therapy, I had everyone's hesitation that typically has it, you know, before you go into it. And I think I look back at it now, I'm so grateful that I've had really good people around me for over 10 years to help me along this journey. Because you've got to be able to check yourself, you know, looking at yourself in the mirror, you validate yourself, right? But if you look at someone, if you have someone else to shoot back what you're sharing, it gives you more perspective. You know, it's kind of like sitting next to that guy in that meditation. You know, he wasn't my therapist, but he's teaching me something.
Yep.
He's teaching me something about life that I picked up. But when you've got someone that knows you and they can serve you back good information, they're really good at it. And they're good at subtly hinting things, and you can come to your conclusions. And, you know, one of the proudest things that I've done in my life is, you know, I remember when I first went and saw the sports psychologist when I was young, my father said to me, well, like, why do you need a psychologist? You're smart, you know, successful career, you know, you've been a good athlete. Like, why do you need to go and see one? And I was like, I don't know, Dad, like they're telling me to do this. And then over time I was like, you know what, this is mental gym. You know, people go to the gym to work out their body, but this is how I take care of my mind. And if I had to get rid of my gym membership or my therapist or my coach, I'd get rid of my gym membership. Hands down, easy, done. And when I kind of explained it to my dad in that way, call it 7 or 8 years later, when he was going through some stuff, I finally convinced him to go see a therapist. And that's the thing, one of the things I'm most proud of is taking my dad on that journey. And the way I had to do that was just continue to share with him and be vulnerable with what was going on in my life in a way that I don't think he'd ever really done. I have a strong belief that therapy or coach or someone that you can kind of reflect yourself onto and learn from is an important part of your mental health.
I love that, because there's so much there to unpack that I want to kind of dive into, but you talked a little bit about going back to some of those traits. And for you, it was sitting in that room and hearing Mr. Intensity and knowing that, hey, that was my identity. That was who I was. That was like, I just got everywhere through hard work and intensity. And thus that trait that you learned, that's what success meant to you. That's what success was. That's how you found it. And so it's the only way that you knew. And so you were taking that from sport and bringing it into every aspect of your life. And I relate very heavily to that. The last 2 weeks, I've been kind of doing some series talking about a lot of my journey that I've been on in that mental expression, and kind of figuring out for me, it was hard work and scrappiness. Those were my two words. That's just how I got everywhere. That's how I found my success. And what I say, what my therapist has taught me, is that what works for you is great until it begins to work against you.
Yep.
And it was something that started to work against me. It was the limiting factor for me to grow beyond a certain thing. And an analogy that we can provide for you listeners out there is, think about like a staircase. Is when you're younger and you're learning how to work hard, you're learning how to have intensity, you're learning how to have a work ethic, those stairs are very small. And so you can step up on them, and it gets you faster and faster, gets you to where you want to be, gets you those results. But the moment you get deeper into life, those stairs become longer and wider and higher and longer and wider and higher. And that scrappiness, that hard work, that intensity isn't going to get you to that next stair anymore. And it's too hard to get there. And it takes you on a difficult road. And going back to what John's saying, is this massive amount of awareness, the understanding of a new perspective, is what allows us to look back at ourselves in the mirror with no judgment, no ego, but say, you know what? I need a change. I need to make sure that I can adjust this so that I can perform at a higher level and reach those new lengths that I'm wanting to go on. For any of those people who this resonates with heavily, John, where they're like, you know what? I do have a couple of things that I've like been leaning on and that I've been engaging in that no longer serve me, that have been really kind of holding me back, to be quite honest, of where I'm wanting to go. I've got everything in my life except X, or I'm working so hard and not getting the returns that I want. What would you say to them in terms of advice as to where to lead, where to go, and where to start?
Yeah. So I love that you called out that, you know, intensity was sort of part of your journey as well. And you realized that if I was going to operate this way and keep going, I wasn't going to get what I want. And I guess for me, that shows up in my, you know, romantic relationships, or it has in the past. You bring that intensity in. It's not the right, sometimes it's not the right place to bring in your intensity. The good thing is you have access to it, right? You have access to your intensity. So then you get to learn about that, and then you get to choose when to use it. And you got to try and find the appropriate place to use your intensity, or use your attribute, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be intensity, it could be something else. So learning what you have access to and figuring out the right place to use is really important. So, you know,
I want to pause you there for a second, because that is, I don't want that to go like just rush over somebody's head. The intensity, the hard work, the work ethic, those are all amazing attributes. They're just not all amazing all the time.
Yeah. For
and
sure.
To what John's saying is, like, think about, you can't dissociate who you are, but the awareness of choosing to lean into this trait that is so well developed. You're competitive, amazing. Probably not going to be outstanding to be competitive cooking with your spouse. Probably not going to be awesome to be competitive playing soccer with your kids. But probably really great to be competitive when you go and step into the business world. Probably really good to be competitive when you go and step into a meeting with a competitor. But probably not awesome to be that competitive when you're stepping into the room with your coworkers or your executive team.
I'm glad you said that, 100%.
And so being able to identify, and going back to these two words that John mentioned, which was awareness and perspective. and being able to understand when you use these traits and which traits you need to work on and develop. Continue, John. It was great. I just didn't want that to go just go over people's heads as we're saying, like, these traits that are no longer serving you are holding you back so that you don't use them. No, rather you figure out when you use them.
Yeah. Except come back to that. I think I said it earlier, but accepting who you are, right? Yep. And understanding that. And the more you learn yourself, the more you get to, it's a game. Like you get to kind of be the type of person you want to be or bring that attribute into that situation. And you just learn it over time. And so you kind of asked before, like, advice for people in sort of gaining some of this stuff. And I think, you know, advice is, it's like a good book, you know, it comes at the right time. And it's personal to you. You know, this is personal to me. This is what's worked out for me in my own world, just because this is the way that I've operated. I find that writing is incredibly helpful to me. Just opening up my journal and writing things down. And what's interesting about that, though, is you start developing the thoughts that come up. There's been moments where I've sat there, I've opened up the page and nothing comes out. Like, absolutely nothing comes out. And that's okay. And I'm actually like, you know what? Quiet mind. That sounds good. I'm just going to move on then. But, you know, I've found that writing is a good thing. And I found that just listening to feedback and being aware of what's being served back to you. You know, Kat, president at AG, I've heard her on a podcast before she even started working for us. And one of the phrases I loved that she mentioned was, if someone's giving you feedback, first assume they're right. Because if you assume they're right, it stops you from responding negatively in the moment, getting really heated. And it allows you time to transition into, what are you going to do with that feedback and that response? Now, you don't have to agree. You can go away and you can think, oh, you know what? They said two or three things there. I actually agree with the first. So I'm glad they brought that up to me. That's something I should work on. That second one, you know, I don't necessarily believe that one. So when I catch up with them, I'll say thank you, but that's not the one that really sits with me. You don't have to agree, because each person has their context, but just first assume they're right. And then you can think about it, you can reflect on it and decide kind of how you want to use it. And that's the choice. That's the ownership of receiving that feedback and moving forward. So, you know, part of the moving to the US and having to become introverted and sort of looking at everyone and assessing them and who they are and somewhat judging, right? Somewhat judging, being judgmental. I was a judgmental kid. You know, that at least gave me some time to also use that judgment on myself. But then over time, I moved that away from judgment to just awareness and understanding and acceptance, and then evolution, like evolving myself. I don't sit in one place, you know, as a human, in my body, in my mind, or even like literally, like physically, I'm always traveling around.
But, this is true.
but it's important to be okay with what comes up, whether you're writing or whether you're taking feedback. Just be okay with it. You just have to know that you have an option to do something about it. And I'll give you a pretty interesting example recently. So I took some time off recently, and I wrote in my journal, you know, most days. And some days nothing came out, as I mentioned. But the rest of the days, as I was writing, I learned how negatively I spoke about myself. And I was like, wow, I'm saying some pretty nasty stuff about myself. Well, not nasty, but I was like, wow, this isn't what people would say about me looking in, you know? But I was saying not great things about myself. And it took me back to what my coach said to me a couple months back, which was, John, 80% of people's thoughts are actually negative. And you just have to be aware of that. It's part of you. They're always going to be there. They're going to try and bring you down. It's the fear stuff. It's always there. You just need to know that and then know what to do with it. And I think one thing that I've learned and had to come to terms with my intensity in the past was, you know, I've kind of got polarity in sort of like my personality and range of my personality. It's an access thing. But I can be really intense, or I can just be enjoying life, and I can kind of flip between the two. And then I noticed in my journaling that I was being really negative about myself, but then I was like, well, then I can also just go straight into being positive. But what I did from going back and reading that negative thoughts, I was like, there's a transition moment here that I need to be aware of. because that transition stops me from reacting kind of too much from a positive standpoint or a negative standpoint. It allows me to think. And I was like, you know what, John, that's a fucking good skill. Like that skill right there, that transition moment, being aware of that transition, leaning into that transition, that for me is better than the outcome, which is the positive. Yes. Outcomes are positive. So for me, the transition was the process, enjoy the process. Like that's the transition from me going, that's a negative thought. Wow. Like what's that? How do I get out of it? And then it was interesting. I was reading through one of it and I was like, okay, John, what you're going to do now is you're going to decide how you could have felt in the moment, how you could have internally responded in the moment. And so I kind of did a little simulation of, you know what, instead of feeling this way, you could have been excited that you were talking to someone that was so passionate about their views on something that you didn't know, that you didn't have to feel that you were, lesser than that person because of what they were knowledgeable about, interested in. You could have been excited because you're a curious guy on learning about their beliefs and what they have and their perspective. And what it did, it put this little smile on my face. And I was like, I noticed that. And noticing that, noticing that change in state, I was like, okay, that is a powerful skill that didn't realize I've subconsciously learned to develop over time. And it just kind of came up as like one of those, like, all right, that's a talisman on my stone of life. Like I can continue to come back to that and I'm not going to be perfect at it every time, but I find that now I'm getting quicker at doing that. And it's been a good,
That's a powerful state of awareness and something that plays for you in a very powerful way. And again, it's knowing when to tap into that, knowing and having the awareness to be present enough in every moment to lean in and actually react out of consciousness than to react.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out of what is just present in your mind. There's a difference between being conscious and aware to being unconscious and reacting.
Yeah. And what's sort of come up for me a lot recently is that just that noticing that skill, because you're going to continue to go through life. You know, I'm going to be 80, whatever, 90, and I'm still going to have some of this stuff.
Totally.
You're going to be there. But like just noticing that, it's accepting that it's going to be there. It's not going to be perfect. But knowing that, like, you can do something about it. You can transition. Like if I can transition myself out like that, and I'm, in my early 30s, I'm like, hey, I got some time to get better at this.
I love it. John, what does awareness, or pardon me, in knowing that this journey has been so powerful for you, and you've clearly live in this ownership state, you live in this ownership mentality. It's something that has generated a great amount of success for you. What does ownership mean to you?
Yeah. It's a good question. It's truly a value at Athletic Greens. Chris, our founder, he's been drilling ownership into us for a long time. He's had me read Extreme Ownership a couple of times. It's a good book. If no one's read it out there, it really truly just puts you in your place, I think. Ownership for me is, I think it's a broad word. I think it's dynamic as well. I think ownership is going to mean something at one point. It's going to change and you're going to learn more about what ownership is. So I think it's very, very dynamic. And I think what's interesting is talking about what ownership isn't. And then when you talk about what it isn't and how it can make you feel, why wouldn't you take ownership? Like, why wouldn't you do it? And I think it's Paul Allen or David Allen, whatever the book is, Get Things Done. And he's got this system, and one of the pieces is like, if it's 2 minutes, you do it now. If it's going to take some time, you do it later. And one of them is delegate, right?
Yep. That's your newie work.
Yeah. So if you're going to, let's change delegate to abdicate. So if you're going to abdicate, like let's just say a situation happens and what you're doing is you're abdicating blame onto the other person. What you've now done is you've created a gap between what you expect that person to do and you've got to start waiting for that person to do that thing. And that gap creates anxiety, and that gap, it's tension, and it creates a whole bunch of things that you don't want to show up. And so what does that anxiety do? It stops you from like being creative. It stops you from being yourself. It stops you from moving. Like you're abdicating, you're waiting. Not a good feeling. Instead, take ownership. Just take responsibility to have that awareness, even if that person didn't do something great. There's a piece of ownership that you can take. It's, how am I going to respond to this? You know, what's the hard decision that I have to make? Do I have to leave this person? Do I have to fire this person? Do I have to, you know, ignore that change, like take some, like take that responsibility by being awareness, by being aware of what you can do. And I think it's that cycle of something happens, be aware of it, reflect on it, act on it. Because you can't just have it as theory. Like, you can't just be aware and it just can't be responsibility. It has to be acted on. That's the last leg of ownership for me is act on it. And then, yeah, I think for me, it's you know, a couple of psychology books will sort of say, you know, you need a little bit of pain to run away from. I look at that pain of having to wait for someone to take blame. Like, nah, I don't have time for that. I like getting things done. And so for me, it's awareness, responsibility, reflect on it, take act on it. And it's that cycle, just keep going through that cycle. And that can come up in honestly every situation. Yeah. The ownership might lead to a hard, difficult and a decision that's not great, but that's okay because time and sort of like leaning into the short-term difficulty will be okay.
I love it. It's a huge message. Where can people find you? Where can people follow your travels, learn more about you and what you do, if they're interested in kind of leaning into a little bit more John Korn?
It's hard to find me. No, so you can probably find me mostly on Instagram, I think. You know, I do travel a lot. If you follow me on Instagram, it's just John Korn, JONCORNE. And you'll see lots of content about croissants and coffee, bikes, running, and travel. I think I'm not on Twitter yet. I don't know if that's going to happen, but Strava as well. You know, if you're in the same spot, would love to go for a run with you. So follow me on Strava. It's Juan Maiz, which is JUANMAIZE, which is John Korn in Spanish. So you can find me on Strava. And if we're in the same place, let's go for a run.
I love it. I love it. So guys, it comes back to this, that you always have a choice, no matter who you are, where you are, what job you're currently in, what state your business is in, what your relationship status is, what your gender is, you always have a choice. And to understand that confidence has seasons. Confidence is going to be high at sometimes, and it's going to be low at sometimes, and that is okay. But what is steadfast is your purpose and belief as to you and what you are doing, and making sure that is the bedrock of what you are doing. That purpose and belief is steadfast, but confidence will have seasons. And being able to take a look at that, because you can reinvent yourself. This is not a unilateral place in which we're going. It is a continual undulating life that we live, where there's highs and lows and learning situations. You might find yourself at 23 years old sitting next to somebody who's 65 and just realizing for the first time that you can do things differently. You can live differently. You can make different choices. And knowing that we have a choice, and it's a very powerful thing to bring that awareness into your life. If I want to leave you guys with one thought here, if you gave your mind a microphone, would you be proud of what you were hearing? Or would you be embarrassed? And it's a unique thing that we can come back to, is how are we speaking to ourselves? How are we talking to ourselves? How are we building ourselves up? Be your biggest fan. Live differently, because we know success is different. So own your different. And we'll see you guys next week.